Welcome to Grain on the Brain by the Prairie Organic Grain Initiative. We're working to create resiliency and stability in the prairie organic grain sector. Tune in each month as we're joined by an industry expert and farmer to discuss important issues in organic grain farming. Check out our website at pivotandgrow.com and see what organic grain production can do for you. We bring the resources, tools, and expertise you need to get growing.
Welcome, everyone. We're here with Brenda Frick, and we're going to talk today about weeds in organic cropping systems. Brenda Frick is a freelance organic specialist, an organic inspector, an avid community gardener, a kindergarten to 12 substitute teacher, a Western producer columnist, and partner in Resilience Solutions Consulting. She has a PhD in weed ecology and teaches a university-level online organic weed management course and an elementary school gardening program. She's worked with the organic community for over 25 years, acting as liaison between scientists and farmers. And I've had the pleasure of sitting in on a few of her lectures in the past. And she always has some interesting stuff to talk about weed management. And so we're happy to have you here today, Brenda.
Well, thank you.
So our topic for today's podcast is dealing with weeds and getting into the weeds or getting out of the weeds, but we'll get into the weeds, I guess, in the short term.
Sounds good to me. Reel me in if I get too carried away.
Will do. Thank you. So my top question here, or the first question I wanted to talk about, was just some of the problem weeds that you see in cropping systems through your work.
Basically, the weeds on organic farms are the weeds that are on everybody's farm before they spray them away. Basically, the most common things that organic producers are dealing with are Canada thistle and lamb's quarters and wild mustard and just the usual players in the system. Which ones are particularly a problem at any particular time depends as much on weather as anything else.
And do you have concerns, I guess, about a shift in weed species or some problem weeds that we may see coming down the pipe that are of greater concern for you than the ones that we're kind of getting used to dealing with?
Well, one of the weeds that is particularly problematic for people in southern Saskatchewan is field bindweed. And it's a problem in part because it's new and in part because it's really difficult to control. But in the future, I think because climate or weather has such a huge effect on things, that climate change may bring us a bit of a new weed profile. But the weeds that we have grow everywhere, so I don't think we'll lose any that way. But we may get a few that are a little less winter hardy and aren't as big a deal now, but that might be able to survive a weakening winter, perhaps. But
I've always kind of been of the opinion that some of the weeds that we see on our farm, and I think probably most producers would say the same thing, are a symptom of some other issue an issue in their cropping system that's leading towards them having those type of issues.
Well, weeds certainly respond to what you do. And so if you change your system, you can get changes in your weed population. I know a lot of people are trying to reduce tillage, for instance, and there are lots of very good reasons to reduce tillage, but reducing tillage makes it more likely for your Canada thistle to survive or your quackgrass or whatever. And so there are some changes in the weed populations or the weed communities that are a result of what we do. And they can also be a result of the fertility in the land. And a lot of weeds are very responsive to fertilizers and whatnot and really do well with them. And then we get them doing less well, usually with with a lower fertility, but there are some that can manage with a particular deficit, and then you see them more often as you begin to have a problem with a deficit in that nutrient.
Are there some common, I guess, successful weed management options that you're seeing people implement that seem to be working well for them? Or
In some ways, that's a little difficult because herbicides are very effective, and people want to see an organic weed method that's as effective as herbicides. And herbicides can be, 95% effective. The organic weed management practices aren't that good by themselves. They need a team player sort of approach where you use several different techniques in order to get the best result. And when you think of it, why not fine-tune your whole farming system and all of the things that you do in order to get the best weeds result? And if you can do several things, three or four or five different techniques, then you can be on top of it. But if you only want to tweak one little thing and see magic, that's really hard.
Yep, for sure. So can you go into a few of the big things that you see as being part of that system?
Well, one of the simple, maybe a little expensive, but not too bad kind of things is just to bump your seeding rate up. And yeah, seed costs money, but if you bump the seeding rate up to 1.5 times what you would normally do, you have that much more crop out there. And basically what happens in most systems is that your crop doesn't capture everything, so the weeds come in to take over all of the empty spaces. If you leave them fewer empty spaces, they won't do as well. So increasing seeding rate is really useful. I'm a little reluctant to recommend tillage, but it is darn useful. And pre-seeding tillage is a useful thing if you've got weeds that have come up ahead of your crop. The best possible thing for your crop is for it to be the first one out there, because largely in terms of sunshine and whatnot, it's first come, first serve. So if your crop can get there first, it can shade out the weeds. But if the weeds get there first, they shade out the crop. So you want to get a head start. That means trying to clean the slate first of doing a tillage and getting rid of the weeds that will come up. Maybe even if you're planting a big seed and you've planted it an inch deep, you could just do a very light cultivation or harrowing before the seed comes up, so that, again, your crop seed is coming up, the seedling is coming up into a clean field, and that will give it a head start. Some crops tolerate a certain amount of in-crop tillage, harrowing or rotary hoe or something like that. Sometimes having an intercrop helps, like putting sweet clover underneath a wheat crop, say. If your wheat is up and it's about time to harrow, broadcast a little sweet clover and then harrow that in, and maybe sweet clover will be your weed rather than lamb's quarters or something. And then careful how you harvest, so you're not picking up a bunch of weeds, blowing them out the back of the combine and setting yourself up for next year. Gather up that stuff, manage that as effectively as you can. And then maybe graze after harvest to reduce the volunteers. The cattle will enjoy whatever it is you've taken out of there, and then eat up all of the long-term kind of perennial weeds or the things that get started in the winter annuals, gobble those up. Have a good solid rotation. Use green manures rather than just plain fallows so that you're building soil and keeping the soil covered as much as you can. Mix it up. So if what you're doing in one year is the same as the next year and the next year and the next year, then the weeds that do well there will multiply and do very, very well. If you do a different thing from year to year, then it keeps the weeds confused in the sense of, well, this worked well and this group was there, but now the windows of opportunity are in a different place and they don't work as well for the weeds that were happy last year. So all sorts of sort of diverse things that can be done in that way. Picking strong varieties, rotating in strong crops like barley, even though flax and lentils might be your money crops.
Yeah, so I'm hearing, I think, a lot of diversity, and I often think the same thing, that having some different things going on helps keep the weeds a little bit behind what's going on with you.
Yep, and if you see a particular weed building up, have a look at how that weed lives. When does it germinate? When are its peak moments of growth? How does it do well? And fill in things during those opportunities. If it's something that is doing really well over the winter, or you know, in the fall and then again in the spring, maybe having a winter annual crop, fall rye, a sweet clover, something like that during that time will take that advantage away from it.
Are there any kind of novel or different weed management strategies that you're seeing have success, whether that's equipment options or other things that we haven't kind of talked about?
I kind of like the comb cut as far as a piece of equipment that goes into a standing crop at a little later point so that you can actually get some control if you weren't able to do that early in the season. I am really impressed with some of the work coming out of Martin Ence's lab, particularly around grazing termination for green manures. I really like that kind of work. I hear that some people in Alberta have started looking into robot weeders, which is kind of an exciting idea. They're kind of like those Roombas for vacuuming, but they just go down the rows and they eat out or nip off the little weeds there, and they are able to recognize your crop from anything else, so they can kind of do that. I don't know that that has big field, extensive value there. But for small-scale horticultural crops, that looks like a cool and interesting idea.
I wondered if you'd be able to speak to any tough-to-manage weeds. I know probably the weed that I worry most about on our farm is Canada thistle. I just feel like I work pretty hard to manage patches whenever we can. And that's the one weed that I really feel like if it did take hold, I don't know what I would do to kind of deal with it. And yeah, it sounds like maybe in some areas, field bindweed would be another one to talk about as far as just management strategies that you feel work for those two weeds.
Okay, well, Canada thistle is one of the things that we really had an increase in here in Saskatchewan when it was quite wet for a number of years, because tillage is kind of an obvious answer for Canada thistle, and you can't go in when it's too wet. So the Canada thistle kind of got away on a lot of people. But as it dried up, they managed to get it back under control. But tillage is maybe the easiest thing for Canada thistle. There are little biocontrol things, but they're only a little bit good. And you can increase seeding rates, get a little effect with that. You could put it into forage. 3 years of alfalfa cutting and baling and whatnot will do a lot of damage to the Canada thistle and often make it go away. But a lot of people don't want 3 years of forage. If your land is not too erodible, you might go with the starvation kind of method. Sometime when the Canada thistle is just starting to bud, just has the blossoms on it, cultivated at that point. At that point, it's most vulnerable. It's like having a baby. When you start reproduction, everything goes into that and it depletes the bank account it's got in the soil, and it's all up top. So you hit it then, and then as it garners its resources and builds to have another set of rosettes come up or whatever, you cut those down. Some farmers will tell you every month in the right moon phase, whatever, but every 3-4 weeks, something like that, hit it again. And every time it takes its reserves to build up another round and come out on the surface, yeah, we'll hit it again. And maybe if you're lucky enough, you'll hit that so that the last tillage in the winter, in the year, is just before a good hard frost. And just, I mean, it's basically about hitting it hard every time that it manages to put something out there before it can replenish those root reserves. So that's called carbohydrate starvation, because you don't let those leaves build roots. You just use up all the reserves again and again until they're gone. That's probably the most effective thing with Canada thistle, but again, that's an awful lot of tillage in the fall, which you might want to do something to reduce the impact of that. Put in barrier strips that are kind of your tillage machine width apart, so that you can do this tillage without, and still have like little crop shelter belts on your, in your field, or little areas where you're holding the soil against erosion. Maybe put in a fall cover afterwards too, just to keep that okay, keep that from eroding. But balancing that with forage would be a good thing, because forages build the kinds of things that tillage destroy. So that might be a good balance. Bindweed is like Canada thistle, but worse in some ways. It has the same kind of depth of roots. It spreads wide as well as deep, and it really makes a lot of seed that's very dormant. So it's kind of got everything a weed should want. If it's new to your farm, make the effort to get rid of it, because you really don't want it. But if it's part of what you have to deal with, then reduce its ability to spread as much as you can. Manage that area separately, perhaps, or last with any tillage equipment, so that you don't drag it into the rest of the field. I hate to say the best you can do is not make it worse, but that might be true. There are biocontrol agents that are being used in southwestern Saskatchewan. I'm not sure yet how well that's doing, but that might be an answer. I have another one that I'm concerned about, though, and that's alfalfa. Alfalfa is a very common weed, right? It grows in all the ditches. When we have GE, if alfalfa make it here, that will be a problem, because it may take alfalfa off of the organic farmer's crop list, and that would be very sad. But I do see organic farmers playing around with other perennial forages and trying to find different answers about that. But that, I think, is one of the things that maybe, as time moves forward, one of the issues that we have to deal with. And as you know, alfalfa is not easy to get rid of either.
On the bindweed front, I wanted to be clear. I know a lot of people call wild buckwheat bindweed, but this field bindweed that I'm talking about is a different one. I wonder if you, I don't honestly even know what it looks like. I wonder if you could describe it a little bit so people know what to keep an eye out for.
Okay. Field bindweed has leaves that are about the same shape as wild buckwheat, but everything else is different. Basically, it looks like miniature morning glory plants that when it flowers. So it will look like bindweed, or it'll look like wild buckwheat, and it'll crawl all over the ground too. So that will be similar, but the seeds and the flowers are entirely different. And if you pull it up at all, its roots are extensive. When you pull up a wild buckwheat, it has a little taproot. It's not a big deal. When you pull up a field bindweed, it will be attached to every other field bindweed, kind of the way quackgrass runs on those little runners, the rhizomes that go all over the place and have a bud here and a bud there. It does that. It also has deep roots, kind of like Canada thistle. So the worst you can think of Canada thistle and the worst you can think of quackgrass, put those together with a cheery little morning glory flower. Actually, yeah, field bindweed is kind of perfect weed in some ways, you know, not from the farmer's perspective, perhaps, but it's got what it takes to continue and survive. And that's maybe what farmers have issue with.
Yeah, for sure. And I wanted to go back to the alfalfa as well a little bit. I remember watching our neighbor every spring, he would burn ditches. And I think that's what he was trying to manage was any, did I say alfalfa? Cause I meant Canada thistle, Canada thistle in the ditches. It's definitely something that I think is a source of seed, whether or not that's where we're seeing Canada thistle plants come from. And I guess how to manage Canada thistle in the ditch or whether we should really be worrying about it.
Well, I suppose every Canada thistle patch has started from a seed originally, or at least most often. But the vast majority of Canada thistle plants come from root buds from the original Canada thistle plant. And they're all one great big clone, kind of like a patch of trembling aspen. Most of the problem is not with seed. Plus, Canada thistle has both male and female plants. So those that are male plants, you don't have to worry about seed from them. And the female plants, if you take a handful of that fluff that floats around and makes people worried, you will have a hard time finding seed in it. They don't set a lot of seeds. Mostly it's just fluff. But of course, there are a few seeds. But the level of panic people have seeing the cloud of white fluff is perhaps a little excessive given that most of that white fluff is not seed.
Yeah, I've always thought the same. It looks a lot worse than it is, I feel like. And when your neighbors are looking over the fence at you, I think you feel worse than maybe you need to in that situation all the time.
Yeah, people have a way of making the weeds in your field sort of markers of shame, of poor farmer talent or poor management. And they're really not that. They really are simply part of the natural ecosystem, plants that evolved with your crops and plants that do well in the same kind of situation that you set up for plants to do well. So it's kind of a shame that people are giving you a hard time at Coffee Row. I know some farmers who don't go to coffee while the wild mustard is in bloom. You know, it's time to go fish and not to go for coffee. But we panic a little too much. We need to keep some control there. We need to let our actions not be actions that encourage the weeds. But a little Canada thistle fluff is probably not too traumatic. And if they're managing their weeds well, they will probably be able to continue to manage their weeds well.
Are there any weeds that you see as being really important to manage? And I guess I'm thinking issues with marketing a crop and that sort of thing.
Well, I think it is really useful to clean your crop, clean the seed coming off of the combine, preferably, before it goes into your bins, or at least at some point before you sell it, because you'll do better in market with a cleaner crop. And you can keep the weed seeds and sell those as another product. So that's useful that way. The ones that are problematic in some way tend to be the ones that can't screen out easily. But technology is pretty good for those high value kinds of things. If you have enough money to put into it, you can clean most anything. But the market might not give you enough money to make that worthwhile.
Yep. No, that definitely, I agree. If there's money there, you can usually fix the problem.
It's odd sometimes which things get caught that you don't think are the same size, though, because like a lentil chip may be the same size as a wheat grain or, you know, some things that don't make sense. But once, and pulses are particularly, they chip into weird shapes and sizes. So again, be really careful harvesting your pulses. But
we've all been reading a lot, and I think listening and paying close attention to some of the soil health programs that are going on. And I think that's been a real challenge for organic producers, or definitely for annual crop organic producers, is trying to balance that line of managing, or trying to, I guess, build a resilient system with soil health in mind, and managing weeds to get production that you're happy with. So I wonder if you'd speak to that a little bit.
Yeah, I think we know quite well that tillage has damaging effects on the soil, and that the best thing that can be done for a soil is to have a green cover on it of some sort. That being said, tillage is really effective, and particularly, unfortunately, fall tillage can really set things up so that you've taken care of perennial weeds, you've taken care of winter annual weeds. It's just so much easier to get things going in the spring once you've had a fall tillage. But the fall tillage sets things up for all manner of overwinter erosion issues, soil that runs with the snow melt and whatnot, and it's just exposed for so much longer to the wind. They've done some research at the Swift Current Research Station of Ag Canada on reducing tillage in general and specifically in the fall, and they have ended up with test plots so full of Canada thistle that they can't really function in growing a crop. So it's a balance. You need to deal how you can deal with those things. And if you have to have a lot of tillage to make things work, there are ways of ameliorating that. The biggest of those is probably to grow forage, because it builds soil in a way that compensates for the damage of tillage, and to have some kinds of well, we used to have shelter belts. Those were a wonderful idea. But some kinds of barriers between different fields, or if you're growing something like lentils, maybe every so often you plant a few, or if you've got a seed box that divides that way, just one part of the seed box into barley or something, so that it's holding against the wind when the plants are small and sad, and not holding the soil together. You know, there are things that can be done that are positive. And I know Diane Knight at the University of Saskatchewan has talked about how the effects that farmers who are growing green manures, and particularly nitrogen green manures, especially the big ones like sweet clover, are building soil at a rate that they don't see the same kind of damage to soils that you see on a farm without forages. So, you know, you can make a difference, and you know, if it's all a balance, that you can move the balance more in your favor. It's becoming much more popular now in the farming community in general to grow cover crops and mixed cover crop cocktails and things of that nature. And the idea of keeping a field green as much as is possible is really a healthy thing for the soil, particularly healthy for the soil microorganisms, because when you take the crop off and when the crop is dead, there's nothing for them to eat until you've got some more living plants there. So having, even putting oats on at the end of the season, you know they'll frost off. That's okay. Then you don't have to deal with them next year. But they'll hold the ground for a while and supply those soil organisms if we happen to have a year where it doesn't get a killing frost until November. Or, you know, having at least part of your green manure season covered is good, but you can actually cover a number of things. If you terminate one green manure, you can plant another one after it. You can even, another thing, Martin Ince is a brilliant guy. One of the things that he realized is that you don't have to have green manure crops that are well adapted here in general. Like I think of something like sorghum. Well, we couldn't grow sorghum here. Well, you can if it's a green manure and you don't care to get seed off of it. It's just that it won't grow to seed, but it'll still grow to biomass and feed the soil and have something really good to till into the soil when you're done.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. I know we've been experimenting more with doing our fall tillage and getting that out of the way and then either broadcasting or going in with the drill and trying to establish something. We had a wheat field last year. We seeded to a mix of flax, oats, and fava beans probably 3 weeks or even a month after harvest. And I found a neat app, and I can't remember the name of it, but I think if you're looking for it, you'll find it, that tells you the kind of percent canopy cover if you take a picture of the ground looking down. And I went out the other day on the frost, and I took a half a dozen or so pictures, and I think the average cover was 85% of leaf cover and 15% bare ground on my field. And if I go test the ones all around me, I think it'd probably be the opposite. That'd be 15% trash and 85% black. So I think there's lots of room for getting something established and still maybe having some time to do some tillage and do some of the management that might be more necessary in our system.
Yeah, and another thing that tillage does is bury residue. So you don't have that residue sitting on the surface, but you don't have the infectious ability of that residue either. So it's a good disease management practice to bury residues, but you don't want nothing on there. So if you've got something growing, that's so much better. And the seasons are really unpredictable. So you get, you know, if you get something started, at least get it up. There will be a few days here, a few days there, and maybe it's not even going to get a hard frost until November. We have those years, you know, or maybe it's going to, everything will be dead in September. You just don't know. Same thing in the spring parts. If you've got something that can overwinter, then you can have some growth before it's time for you to get out there and do something. So it's taking care of that in the times when you can't.
Yeah. And back to your comment about Martin Ince and some of the crop species that aren't as well adapted to this area. The other one we're going to try this season is seeding some annual clovers and ones that, aren't traditionally used in the area and won't be able to overwinter as far as we know, but yet are still quite cold hardy and will kind of keep growing and stay green down to -5, -10 Celsius and grow well into the fall kind of thing before they ultimately realize they're not going to make it, but that'll be their problem. So I think there's lots of opportunity for trying some different things than what we're used to and what our neighbors are used to seeing. So
well, and it's nice to have something to show off to the neighbor that's not a weed too.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
No, I just would like us to have a thoughtful reaction to weeds. There's so much of a see a weed, kill it kind of response that is promoted in the rural, well, in the city as well, throughout our society, it seems. But Some of the weeds are actually doing something useful. All of the weeds are part of the natural ecosystem. And if we really want to get rid of them, maybe we need to think things through from their perspective, you know your enemy kind of thing. Not that I think they're really enemies, but if you understand where they're a little bit more about them, you can see where their weak points are and how you can manage in a slightly different way. And maybe it's only a matter of seeding a week later and letting them come up first and then cultivating them away. Or seeding a week earlier so that they're coming up in a good canopy and so suppressed by your crop. Sometimes all you have to do is tweak a little, as if you're kind of watching what's happening in the biology of your weeds.
Yeah, no, that's a very good point. I think, yeah, understanding why they're growing there is probably as important in trying to decide how you're going to manage them as.
Yeah, sometimes I think we just panic a little, but we don't really, you know, if we could get over the shame of having weeds and just kind of think it through, we could manage better.
I know I panic very quickly.
One of the things that is good for the Pivot and Grow folks is I'm the Pivot and Grow 1-800 Ask an Expert person. An awful lot of those calls come to me. So if you go to the Pivot and Grow website and just call their 1-800 number, many of those come to me.
That's perfect. Yeah, I often find things on that Pivot and Grow website that I didn't know exist, and I encourage everybody listening to feel free to have a read through, and there's fact sheets and different farmer profiles and all sorts of stuff on there that you'll find very useful if you can find the time to go through. Thank you, Brenda, for joining us. This has been a pleasure, and I think everybody that's listening will be happy to hear some of your tips.
Well, you're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Check out the Pivot website at www.pivotandgrow.com. It has tons of resources to help you through each step of your farming journey, from transition to production, marketing, and research. You can also follow us on Twitter and like us on Facebook at Pivot and Grow, or join in the conversation using the hashtag Pivot and Grow.